Welcome to the Revolutionary Health Podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Center. I am a licensed clinician in search of how to live a meaningful and healthy life. I challenge both traditional and functional medicine ideologies in search of truth and wisdom. I allow room for curiosity and always keep an open mind. I enjoy deep conversations with my guests, giving them a safe space to share their research and personal observation, as I feel both equally contribute to the body of knowledge and human experience. Note that the opinions of my guests do not always reflect my own, whether I share that openly or not. And of course, the podcast is for educational purposes only. We do not offer medical advice. So grab a cup of coffee and join me for some intimate and unique discussions about finding wellness in the 21st century. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Revolutionary Health Podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Center. I have a fun episode in store for you today. If you've been following my content for a while, you know that I like to debunk some popular supplements like vitamin D, iron, and ascorbic acid, which, if you're not familiar, that's the synthetic form of vitamin C. You may be surprised to learn that many supplements cause more harm than good. And you know, one population that I feel is really taken advantage of in the supplement industry is moms-to-be. I mean, what's the first thing a woman does when she learns she's pregnant? She Googles, right? What do I do? What should I be looking out for? What kind of symptoms should I be expecting? Who should I consult with? Which vitamins should I be taking? So to prepare for this episode, I did just that. I Googled. And it turns out that Google gives some really bad advice for mamas-to-be. In this discussion, I sit down with Morley Robbins and his wife, Dr. Liz Reed, to debunk Dr. Google's advice. We talk about the science behind why Google's advice is perhaps contraindicated for pregnant women. And we give you solutions for how to carry out a healthy pregnancy. If you are not pregnant or planning to become pregnant, this episode is still for you. Many women out there take prenatal vitamins for other reasons, and this episode will give you a really good idea of what you can do instead. This episode is extra special for me because I got to record it in person with Morley and Dr. Liz. I had them over to my home for a special taping. So if you want to watch this discussion, you can head on over to the show notes for a link to the YouTube video. If you enjoy this episode, I would really appreciate it if you would consider sharing it with others. Maybe you have a friend who is family planning or pregnant that could benefit from hearing this information. You'll be really surprised to learn just how harmful our mainstream advice is and the medical emergencies it causes for moms. And just to kind of give you a reference point for just how important this is and why I'm so passionate about this topic, and I'll just comment on some statistics in the United States. But in 1970, 5% of births were via cesarean section. By 2000, that number increased to 23%. The most recent statistic I can find, and I apologize, is from 2015, and that number is 32%. So just imagine what it is today. And I also want to note that for women of color, that number is higher. It was close to 36%. And we know that C-sections are hard on moms and produce more sterile babies, right? So if you have a C-section, your risk for medical complications increase, your healing time is longer and more cumbersome, and baby doesn't get that healthy bacteria on the way out because he or she doesn't make it through the birth canal to swallow mom's microbiome. We also have a high maternal mortality rate, despite being one of the most developed countries in terms of medical technology. In the United States, we are number one in cost and number 37 in quality. That should really tell us something. And I would argue that it all starts with getting bad advice when you first find out you're pregnant, right? Because that's when you start making decisions that affect your health. And that really sets the stage for medical complications down the road that ultimately lead to a cascade of medical interventions that you don't necessarily want for labor and delivery. So what can we do to not fall victim to this system? We can empower ourselves with knowledge and prepare our bodies in the best possible way. We can also choose not to participate in the medical system and go back to having babies at home. And I was really grateful to have Dr. Liz in on this conversation because she has birthed 5 babies at home and she talks about her experience with that. All right, friends, are you ready? Let's dig in. All right. Well, welcome to Revolutionary Health, everyone. Today we have a special episode. I'm here in person with Morley and Dr. Liz, and we are going to talk about all things pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a great conversation.
I'm so excited. Yep. So many of my listeners are first-time moms, young moms, and there's a lot of really upsetting information on the internet. And what's the first thing that a woman does when she finds out she's pregnant? She hits up Google, right? And Googles all the things. And Google doesn't give us really good advice. So I think today we're going to debunk a lot of issues with prenatal vitamins and talk about what you really, like what you should take instead or what you should do instead. And then Dr. Liz has a really interesting and beautiful experience with home birthing. She's done 5 home births herself. And I think that you all probably want to hear from her about that because more and more women are choosing to do home births, especially in light of COVID, because they don't want to go to the hospitals. So where do we want to begin?
Well, I think a really good place to start are my 2 favorite quotations about pregnancy.
Yeah.
And people know that I study minerals and I'm fascinated by minerals. And there's 2 famous physicians, Mildred Seelig and Joseph Barcroft. And those are names you probably have never heard of, but they're crazy important. And Mildred Seelig she specialized in magnesium metabolism. And Joseph Barcroft was an expert in alpine metabolism, climbing mountains. He studied back in the 30s and 40s. He was fascinated by mountain climbers and how they were able to get enough energy to do this. And what's fascinating is later in his career, he turned his attention away from alpine metabolism to obstetrics because he said, it's identical. So the two quotations that I absolutely love are, Mildred Seelig said, pregnancy is a magnesium deficient state. Wow, that's an interesting thing. And for everyone in the audience, think about the last time your doctor measured your magnesium status when you were pregnant. 0. So pregnancy as a magnesium state is a very powerful realization that there's something missing in how we deal with this. And then Joseph Barcroft, famous for saying, pregnancy is Mount Everest in utero. And you're like, wait a minute, what did he just say? Yeah, Mount Everest in utero. So when we hear the word hypoxia, we think of being up on a mountain. There's no oxygen. But what he was really saying is that the oxygen content inside the womb is like being on the top of Mount Everest. It's 1-3% oxygen. That's not a lot of oxygen, folks. There's 21% oxygen outside, and there's 19% inside our lungs. And oxygen, we can't live without it, but it's not our friend. It's a poison, for heaven's sakes. But inside the womb, for the first trimester, the oxygen is between 1-3%. And at the end of the pregnancy, it maxes out at 8%. It's not like the outside. There's a very protected environment. Well, what's the bottom line? When you have 1-3% oxygen, the fetus is a parasite. And so you have an aerobic mom supporting a parasite using anaerobic metabolism. Well, why is that important to know? Because there's 10 enzymes to run anaerobic metabolism. How many of them require magnesium? 8.
Wow.
8 enzymes require magnesium to support anaerobic metabolism. And what I find fascinating is doctors never measure magnesium status when the individual is pregnant. And so it's just, and the other thing they don't measure is they don't measure retinol status, and they don't measure copper status. And it's like, wait a minute, that's how the mom's making energy. She needs to make energy aerobically, even though she's producing energy anaerobically in her womb. The other thing, and we don't want to get too far ahead of the questions, but there are three enzymes that are really important to manage the movement of copper and iron in the woman's body, especially when she's pregnant. It's one enzyme expression through three different proteins. Okay. So you've got, people have probably heard us talk about ceruloplasmin before. That's the copper protein that loves to, it does a lot of things in the body. It's a master antioxidant protein. It's especially important when you're pregnant. So that when you have a healthy ceruloplasmin level in a woman who's not pregnant, would be around 30. When she gets pregnant, it's going to go up to 90.
Wow.
That's a big deal. That must be really important. If it triples. So we've got ceruloplasmin. Then there's a second protein called Hephaestin. And for those who know their Roman mythology, Hephaestus was important for the forge, the iron forge. But Hephaestin it also expresses ferrooxidase. And that's managing the copper iron dynamic in the womb. So ceruloplasmin's in the tissue and the blood, Hephaestin's in the womb, and then we get into the third protein is called zyklopen, Z-Y-K-L-O-P-E-N, for Cyclops, again, back to your Roman mythology. So zyklopen is providing the enzyme function, the ferrooxidase enzyme function, inside the placenta. Think that might be important? To manage copper and iron inside the very tissue that's going to be supporting the life of the fetus. And again, when was the last time your OB measured any one of those three? Zero. So I think the whole point of this conversation, what got Dr. Liz and I excited about it, is Steph really wants to begin to pull the curtain back and say, what else is going on? And I think that between the three of us, we're gonna blow minds today. And I think we're gonna answer a lot of questions and really appreciate the chance to be here. But people need to know that there's just this foundation of mystery that I think conventional practitioners, whether they're midwives or even doulas or obstetricians, they don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
They weren't taught this stuff. Why? That's the fair question, is why weren't they taught this? So I think that'd be an interesting backdrop for the questions that I know you have.
Yeah, well, if I may ask a question about something you said.
Sure.
You talked about how pregnancy, the first quote is, pregnancy is a state of magnesium deficiency.
Right.
Does that explain why women are fatigued in the first trimester? Or do you think it's...
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
You've been on the show before talking about how magnesium is necessary for energy production.
Right. Absolutely. No. It's again. It's like even though the fetus is little, tiny, it takes a lot of energy. You know. And really, what do I know? I'm a guy. But I was intrigued by this, and I think it's tragic that what I don't know is, where are the grandmothers? We're the great-grandmothers who should have known this wisdom, that it's not getting passed on and it's not being taught in practitioner training. That's the breakdown. And so Dr. Liz has lived this. She's known how important this is, but she may not have the command of the biochemistry the way I have it, but she's lived it. And she knows how important a really healthy diet is. She knows how important you've got to have, if you're going to use supplements, you got to be the right ones, not what's approved, if you will, which we'll get into. But so again, it's just so there's book smarts, street smarts. That's the combination that we bring, and that's why we want to have this conversation.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful.
Is it sheet smarts? Since you were on a sheet, you're probably on a sheet when you were giving birth, right?
And I'm so sorry for, I did not make this introduction. This is Morley Robbins. He's been a frequent guest on the show.
Yeah.
And this is his wife, Dr. Liz. Yes. So I'm so grateful that they're in my home today. And
we just got fed. Oh my gosh, the most beautiful breakfast. And if you ever want to have perfect bacon, come to Steph and Kyle's home. It's amazing.
Oh no, you're talking up our bacon skills.
Exactly.
So I asked my community what questions they have about pregnancy and some of the advice that they've been given. Mm-hmm. So question one, and this is a really common question, and I'm sure it's an easy one to answer, folate versus folic acid.
You can tee that one up and then I can drive it home.
No, you know the chemistry. I don't.
Okay, you don't want to go there. All right, so Mother Nature is folate. Chemistry lab is folic acid. And there are a bunch of B vitamins out there that we need to be mindful of, B1, B2, B3. And then we get to the higher Bs, B9 and B12. Well, I have this theory, and I can't prove it, although I've got a lot of evidence, but I'm not done yet. But my theory is that the B vitamins are all copper dependent, and their job is to help regulate iron. So it's a big job on the body. Especially like B9 and B12 is very, very much involved in the creation of new blood cells. It's very
important. I didn't know that.
Yeah, very, very important. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking with a world-renowned copper expert named Leslie Clave. He's a famous copper expert, MD, PhD, worked at the USDA Human Nutrition Lab in Grand Forks, South Dakota. And we've become friends. And I was talking to him. This goes back many years ago. And I said, Dr. Clave, I have this theory. And I threw out this idea that B vitamins needed copper. And he said, Morley, he said, I can't speak for all of the B vitamins. He said, but what I can state for a fact is that B9 folate is copper dependent. But why is that important? Because folate gets involved in, when we go into the sunshine, we're all really preoccupied with making vitamin D. What we don't know is that we also are breaking down vitamin A in our body when we go into sunlight. And the pivot point for both vitamin D synthesis and vitamin A catabolism, the breakdown of vitamin A, requires folate, which means it requires copper. And so it becomes this really important piece of the puzzle. Again, just before we started the show, we were talking about our friends up in Maryland, the Fosters, and Joey Foster has the saying, missing information equals missing truth. Well, if you don't know that folate is copper dependent, then you don't understand biochemistry and how the body really responds to these minerals. So the fear of neural tube defects, it's a copper deficiency. It's not folate. Yeah, I mean, folate is important in the diet, but it's delivering the mineral that is so important for proper neural development. And what we'll get into is the importance of copper and retinol in that process. And it's just, it's, trust me, there's a lot of literature about it. It's not on the internet, but it's in the scientific literature. It's absolutely very clear.
Well, and to add insult to injury, folic acid, from my understanding, is not even the active form.
Correct.
That's right. For folks that have gene mutations, they could have trouble converting that to the active form and therefore have a negative effect from taking, potentially negative effects from taking folic acid.
That's absolutely true. there's a barb at the end of it that's going to be very, very disruptive. That's very true.
I think that's a really good question because it's really confusing to read the nutrition labels on some of these supplements.
Okay. Sure.
And it'll say, I've even seen ones that say folate, and then down below in the ingredient description, it says folic acid. So they're masquerading folic acid as folate. So you can't even just do a quick glance at the label. You have to go down further and read. And it's really unfortunate.
That's, you know, one of the things that Dr. Liz did, she's a 40 plus year veteran of chiropractic. She would teach her clients how to read labels. It's a really important skill to have.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what you're eating, if you don't know what's the expression you use, it should read like a recipe, right?
Yeah, like a menu.
Yeah,
like it should be food.
Yeah, it's like when you're making muffins and things, go to the cookbook. That's what your ingredients should read like. Mm-hmm. Like you're making a
not some chemical gobbledygook that you can't pronounce.
Exactly.
That's 50 mm-hmm. letters long.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the RCP, you recommend bee pollen for bee vitamins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just want to say this out loud because I don't want to make the assumption. Bee pollen is also great for pregnant women in terms of getting bee vitamins. It's a natural source.
Oh, absolutely.
And copper.
And copper.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the beauty of bee pollen is you can't pollinate a flower. And you can't pollinate an animal without copper.
Mm. Or a human.
We're human. Well, we are animals. You know?
Yes.
but
thank you for reminding me.
Exactly. And she's wearing a cute little shirt that says Puppy's Club. But they don't realize how central our dependence is on these minerals. And bee pollen is just this very innocent means of getting really good nutrients. And it's got to be organic. You know, you don't want to get bee pollen from the farm next to the GMO corn. You got to be careful. But you can find it. It's out there. And it's a very rich source of bee vitamins.
And as local as you can.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have a great local source of bee pollen. So that's if you're listening and you're in the Nashville area,
that's great.
I can point you in the right direction. I love this question. So question number two from the community is, why is iron recommended for pregnant women? What's actually going on? And I've heard you answer this somewhat before, but I love the answer to this question.
How much time do we have?
Well, first of all, why are pregnant women told they're anemic and they need to take iron?
Let's build a little bit of a backdrop first.
Okay.
Very important statistic. In any society, at any given time, 1% of the members of that society are pregnant. 99% are not pregnant. Mm. So that's important to know. So 1% tend to be pregnant. And what happened was right after the First World War, someone got their wires crossed and they started studying pregnant women and noticing that their hemoglobin was going down as the pregnancy was progressing, and drew the conclusion that pregnant women were becoming anemic. And again, it's, on the surface, it makes sense, right? Because the hemoglobin was, and in fact, hemoglobin is and always has been the variable that's used to determine anemia. It's not ferritin, it's not percent saturation, it's how much hemoglobin is in this person's blood. Hemoglobin being, you know, it's the waiter carrying the oxygen. And in a healthy woman's body, she should have between 12.5 to 13.5, I think it's like, it's either grams per deciliter, I think it's grams per deciliter. Or if you're in Europe or UK or Australia, it's going to be 125 to 135. The US puts a decimal point in. And so 12.5, 13.5. And when the woman gets pregnant, the hemoglobin is going to stay at that fairly normal level through the first half of the pregnancy. And then the second half of the pregnancy, from like 20 weeks on, the hemoglobin level starts to drop off. And the technical term for it is hemodilution. The hemoglobin is being spread over a larger volume of fluid because the mom at that point is beginning to get bigger, and we're beginning to produce 1.5 people. And so the hemoglobin is being spread over a larger surface area, but also for more life, if you will. And what's supposed to happen is that, and this is Mother Nature inspired, is the hemoglobin level goes down. And that our ancestors knew that for millennia until these studies from after the First World War, mm-hmm. where they started to create a disease in pregnant women called anemia. And they turned it into a disease when in fact it's not, it's a natural process. And the obstetrician who blew this whole issue out of the water in a good way, his name is Philip Steer. He's a world-renowned obstetrician in the UK. And in 1995, he did a study studying 150,000 live births. I would have been impressed if he'd studied 1,500.
Yeah.
150,000, that's an enormous study. And what Dr. Steers was looking for was, what is the hemoglobin status of the mother correlated with the healthiest Apgar scores in the baby?
Interesting.
Because the Apgar score is multivariable, it's looking for a lot of different factors. And he wanted to see, is there in fact a relationship? And there was. And what he discovered, and it's very well laid out in his article from 1995, is that the healthiest babies were born to mothers who had a hemoglobin between 8.5 and 9.5, which is dramatically different than 12.5, right? And what happens is in modern obstetrics, modern birthing practices, again, we're talking about obstetricians, midwives, doulas. They've all been trained. That if it drops below 12, that's a problem.
Yeah.
If it drops below 10, that's a crisis. And we've dealt with clients, two women who both were pregnant. And one week before they delivered, they were both given iron transfusions because their hemoglobin was below 10, just the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Obstetrician did not understand that. They were given the iron infusion. Mother almost died and baby almost died from that infusion of iron because they don't understand the penetrating research of Dr. Steers from the UK. And so there's just this gross misunderstanding, gross distortion of the truth. And the phrase that I use is, don't confuse your training with the truth.
Mm.
There are two very different camps of knowledge. And unfortunately, far too many women who get pregnant go to practitioners who don't know what minerals are. They don't understand mineral metabolism. They don't understand iron metabolism. They don't understand hemoglobin metabolism. And the number of clients that I've worked with who have been told that they are anemic based on ferritin scores in a pregnant woman's body, which means nothing. It's frightening how many are told. And then they're usually put on a high iron prenatal or an iron supplement on top of a prenatal, or they're given an iron infusion. And it's out of control. And Dr. Liz and I do a lot of work with the Amish up in Pennsylvania. And we're sort of a two-person band trying to wake those folks up, mm-hmm. that they're not anemic, that this is a very natural process of hemodilution. They do not need iron. And it's a very significant crisis in that community, as it is in the general community at large. Does that answer that question? Does that?
I have a question based off of what you said. Is the reason for that hemoglobin going down, or the perceived iron going down, because the body is producing more blood, but it's not producing more iron?
That's great. That's a really, that's a wonderful question. Mm-hmm. Makes sense intuitively, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out why the hemoglobin has a
much larger blood volume.
Yes.
Because it's circulating to the baby too.
Yeah.
So that would make sense that,
So
it would become diluted.
You're asking a really cool question. It's be helpful for the listeners to understand. When we talk about blood, we have to be really careful what we mean. So when we get a blood draw, the tube fills up with red fluid, right? So take the red fluid, put it in a centrifuge and spin it down. And suddenly you're going to get back two colors. You're going to get back red at the bottom and kind of a milky yellow at the top. Mm-hmm. So the red at the bottom is called packed red blood cells. All these little tiny red blood cells that have bazillions of hemoglobin, which have godzillions of heme inside them. They all get squished at the bottom of the tube. And then that milky liquid at the top, that's called serum. Mm-hmm. So we got to spell it right. S-E-A-R-U-M, because it's supposed to have the mineral content of seawater. I don't think many people do, but serum is the fluid that the red blood cells float in, and they need to be floating in seawater to get access to the minerals. So would the body be making more serum? If it's not making more, so it's making more serum, more fluid to support the growth of the baby. Mm-hmm. But I think that you're asking a really important question. What is holding the body back from making more waders, hemoglobin? Because it must mean we don't need that much more oxygen. Again, the misperception is, if you don't understand what Dr. Barcroft was saying, pregnancy is Mount Everest in Euro. Well, oxygen's, it's really thin up there. Mm-hmm. But if you suddenly infused a lot of oxygen, that's not a good thing because you couldn't handle it. And I think that's what Mother Nature knows, is that we don't need that much oxygen to support this life. And what's the iron going to do? It's going to confuse the mechanics and the physiology. And people don't take the time to think that through. Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful question. So there's more fluid.
Yeah.
But there isn't more hemoglobin. And I guess the fluid is, maybe it's to have more minerals, which would make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Well, I was just thinking because, I know pregnant women create more fluid.
And what you've got to be careful of, if you're going to go to an obstetrician, they're going to have gone through a doctoral program, and they're going to get a degree called an MD degree. What does that stand for? Mineral denialist. They don't think minerals are that important. They think that minerals are the hood ornament on a fancy car, when in fact they're the keys to start the engine. So it's a very different philosophy. What we're talking about here is completely different than their training. And again, they confuse their training with the truth. And that's where we have to be really careful. Always bring people back to the mineral truth of how the body really works.
Okay, well, I have a further question now.
That's fine.
That's okay.
That's great. No, it's fine.
Well, so I remember you saying, but one of the things that you've taught is that iron carries oxygen, copper uses oxygen.
Right.
So if we're talking about this RBC versus serum, is one of those aerobic and one anaerobic, or what is, because iron isn't going to be in the serum.
It's going to be in both, actually.
It's going to be in both.
It's going to be in both. Absolutely.
Okay.
No, that's a great question. So 70% of the iron in our body is in our hemoglobin. Again, waders carry oxygen. Another 10% is in myoglobin. That's holding oxygen in the muscle. So we got 80% is literally a wader. And then you've got ferritin, which is a storage protein that's supposed to be inside the cell, not in the blood. We could have an entire conversation on that alone. Okay. But the thing is, the bulk of the iron is in the red blood cell, inside the hemoglobin. But there is iron in that serum because it's part of the recycling system. And so when you say serum iron, that's different than iron in the red blood cell.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Okay? And so that serum iron, it's only about 4% of the iron in the body. It's a little tiny percentage, but it's a really important percentage because, and this is where a lot of conventional trains come off the track. So we have a, I hope you guys are gearheads. I hope you're enjoying this. But every day we need to make new red blood cells. So what's important is we're about 30 minutes into this conversation. Mm-hmm. So every second of every day, every second, we have to make 2.3 million red blood cells every second. And in the course of 24 hours, we have to make 2 trillion red blood cells. That's a lot of red blood cells, right?
Yeah.
But what's amazing, absolutely mind-blowing, I think it's mind-blowing, is it takes 25 milligrams of iron. And between us, we probably have on average about 5,000 milligrams of iron. So 25, a little tiny speck of iron, is needed to support that 2 trillion RBC production. One more step, 95% of that iron, 24 of the 25 milligrams comes from what's called an iron recycling system. Mm-hmm. And the formal name is reticuloendothelial system. It took me 2 years to figure out that meant recycling. And so the RES, recycling system, makes 24 milligrams available. And then you're supposed to get 1 milligram from your diet. Only 1 milligram a day is needed in order to support the day's production of red blood cells. And when you get into prenatals, and I know we will, when you get into supplements in general, what they're gonna have anywhere from 18 to 26, sometimes even as much as 32 milligrams of iron in one pill per day. I've had clients who've been advised by their doctor to take as much as 700 milligrams of iron per day. That's almost 2 years worth of iron every day. It's too much,
yeah.
Way too much. And so the world is very iron-centric, lost in anemia, because the practitioners don't understand copper metabolism. And the most important thing to understand about that recycling system, it's run by copper. The recycling system does not work. Every recycling system in the body runs on the energy of copper. And so that's the chink in the armor of a lot of these prenatals, is they're pumping folks full of iron because they don't understand iron recycling. Mm-hmm. They don't understand pregnancy is Mount Everest in utero. They don't understand what that really means. And they don't understand that a good way to lose magnesium is to take too much iron. So then we've just upped our magnesium burn rate. And so we're amplifying what Mildred Seelig said with pregnancy is an iron deficient state, which then intensifies your observation that
magnesium deficient
state. Yeah. Magnesium deficient state. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excuse me. Magnesium deficient state, which is going to make people more tired.
Yeah.
It all kind of comes together, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. They're given iron like right off the bat, and It just exacerbates the fatigue.
Exactly.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, my next question is going to heat up both of you.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Why are organ meats not recommended due to excess vitamin A for pregnant women?
Go ahead.
No, they absolutely need more vitamin A. I would not restrict organ meats at all.
Yeah.
In fact, one thing to make sure is that all the supplements that people take are not synthetic, but made from food.
Yeah.
That's why I like standard process so much. Everything is food-based and it's organic. And instead of a regular prenatal, I would recommend their multi, which is called Catalin, which is just all food concentrates. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good one. And they do have an iron, for those who feel like need to have some iron, Ferrofood.
But that's based on organ meats.
Yeah. So it's heme iron?
It's organ meats though. I mean, that's the bulk of that supplement.
Yeah.
Which is, that's what our ancestors lived on, folks.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, to recommend not eating organ meats because of a vitamin A, it's like, wait a minute.
No, that makes no sense.
The neural development of the fetus, the wiring is based on copper and retinol.
Yeah.
Before there was a nervous system, the organisms that pre-existed us, their nervous system was called copper. Copper was the original cellular technology. Hey, how you doing down there? It was copper talking to copper. It's like, and that's not me getting goofy. It's just, it's in the literature. I was like, this is amazing. Copper was the nervous system in early life forms. Well, guess what copper is now? It's the basis of our nervous system, but nobody knows that. Mm-hmm. It's so important. I mean, we have a central nervous system. Then we have something called the peripheral nervous system out to our appendages. Mm-hmm. And then there's something head to toe called fascia. All the connective tissue that holds us together is made by one enzyme. It's called lysyl, L-Y-S-Y-L, oxidase, lysyl oxidase. If you want to have some fun with your doctor, ask him what lysyl oxidase does in the body. And then ask him, who's the battery for lysyl oxidase? And it's copper. So from head to toe, all of our connective tissue is made by one enzyme that's made by one mineral. And so that is part of the nervous system, is that electric field that we have of all of our connective tissue. It's really, really important.
It's like an electric fence to keep out bad organisms too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, and organ meats are, if I'm not mistaken, a good source of copper.
Absolutely are. Again,
if they're fed right.
If they're fed right, and so it's got to be grass-fed, organic. You know, get into all the adjectives. Right. But the thing is, the organs are doing very important jobs. And what do they require? Energy.
Mm.
Well, how do you make energy? Oh, you got to have mitochondria. Okay. So to give people a sense of perspective, you're probably thinking, when I say mitochondria, when we're talking about mitochondria, you go back to your high school biology textbook and you had the picture of the cell. And, well, yeah, there were two or three of those little funny things, they're called mitochondria. Scratch that picture. That was made up by Dr. Disney in Disney World. And the average cell has 500 mitochondria. The average liver cell, 2000 mitochondria. Average kidney cell, 4000. Heart cell, 10,000 mitochondria. And my favorite is to point out to women that the mature egg in a woman's body has up to 600,000 mitochondria per cell. It takes a lot of mitochondria to support new life.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't know is that inside each mitochondria need to be 50,000 atoms of copper. And then what am I learning in the last few weeks is that retinol is an electron carrier in the mitochondria, mm-hmm. which is mind-blowingly important. And so suddenly we have a very different image of what the start of life is about. And most practitioners tell people to shun organ meats, shun copper, get away from that retinol thingy. It's dangerous, it's a poison. It's like, that's the basis of life. And again, we live in this very disorienting world now, 2022, and people don't know what the ancestral diet was hundreds and thousands of years ago. We've lost touch with our natural past.
Well, and for those that are worried about excess vitamin A, organ meats also have vitamin D,
right,
which helps to balance excess I'm probably not saying that right.
But. No, I understand where you're going, but people, it's important that you, when you hear the terms copper toxicity mm-hmm. and vitamin A toxicity, should pause and say, could there be more to the story? Could they be misleading me? Could, you know, again, let's put it into historical context. I was 3 years old when President Eisenhower had his first of 8 heart attacks. September 24th, 1955. I don't remember that date back then, but I was just a little tyke at the time. And what did that lead to? It led to what's known today as the low-fat diet. And then we were told, stop eating bacon and eggs, which we had a lovely meal this morning.
It was just butter.
And butter. Stop eating. Oh my God, you guys missed such a great meal. And, and so we were all put on a low-fat diet because we were told we had to get rid of cholesterol, right?
Yeah.
It was cholesterol is going to kill us, right? Turns out that cholesterol goes back to the beginning of time, folks. Cholesterol is one of the first chemicals to appear on the planet. It's really important, and it's a very important chemical for oxygen retention, but we don't have time to go into that right now. But the thing is, it took 65 years from Eisenhower's heart attack mm-hmm. to the late teens, like almost 2020. It was Ravsnikov and Diamond published a very important article. I think it was in 2016. And they said, stop telling us to limit cholesterol. It's essential for our physiology. And these are two really important scientists. And it took 65 years to end that mm-hmm. insane debate. And now what we're living with is the insanity of copper toxicity and retinol toxicity. And you just have to say, wait a minute, are we back to this cholesterol thing again? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to mislead us and that there's more to the story. And so the people who are worried about retinol toxicity, what you should really be worried about is the amount of vitamin D you're taking. Mm-hmm. And we've had that conversation. Steph and I have had that conversation. Then we have what's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks is a really important conversation that she and I had with Jim Stevenson Jr., which I think people are going to really enjoy yeah. hearing what we had to say.
That'll be out by the time you're watching this.
Okay.
Yeah.
More to the story.
So much. That conversation blew my mind.
Yeah.
Blew my mind. Both you and Jim blew my mind. I have two more questions from the crew, and I think these will be short and sweet. One person asked about hyperemesis and miscarriage prevention.
Nausea. I think if you're following the RCP, you're taking enough magnesium and cod liver oil and copper and liquid minerals in your water and eating organic and avoiding synthetic foods, I think you should be fine. I never experienced that with any of my pregnancies. I focused on a clean diet and getting regular chiropractic care. That's important too, to prevent the low back pains and other stuff. And I worked full time all the way up until I went into labor. And then I went home and had a baby, waited 2 weeks, went back to work, took the baby with me, nursed on demand. Yeah, wow. It was good. Yeah, I highly recommend a home birth. I just, you know, was so afraid that if I had to go to the hospital, what they would do, because once you step foot in there, they pretty much own you and they can do whatever they want to your baby. And I didn't want them to vaccinate. I didn't want them to separate me from the baby. I didn't want to be strapped down to a bed. So in your home, you can eat or drink or move or, you know, whatever you need to do to make yourself comfortable. assume any position you want. Nobody's mm-hmm. there to slap your hand or tell you you can't do that. And I sat in a tub for part of it. I stood under a hot shower for part of it. I even labored just sitting on the toilet. That's a good squatting position, is real helpful. So each breath was a little different. I had 4 boys and 1 girl. Number 2 was a girl. And the first 2 were 15 months apart. And there was even a few months where I was nursing 2 at once. So it's almost like having twins.
Oh my gosh.
But that didn't last too long. It was too tiring. So I had to cut the older one off. But the most of the boys' labors were between 6 and 7 hours long. And the doctor that delivered the last baby, he said, that's about the average. It's about 6 hours. My daughter, on the other hand, was a 14-hour labor.
My goodness.
The boys were fine. She was my biggest baby, my longest baby, definitely the longest delivery. It was a hot, sweltering day. It was awful. It was so hot up there. Me and a neighbor girl who wanted to become a midwife. The doctor's midwife was on vacation. So he and my then husband were out sitting in the yard having, you know, drinking coffee and reading newspapers and laughing it up. And I was sweating my buns off. So it was after that summer that we got central air. I just couldn't stand it. But I also tore a little bit with her. Also had a little bit of bleeding and had to get a Pitocin shot in the leg to stop that.
She had jaundice, right?
She had a little bit of jaundice.
So that tells you there's copper was missing and vitamin A was down as well. That's really what jaundice means.
So we had to put her in the sun with the window open. And it didn't last very long. She had very ruddy skin. Oh my gosh, she looked like a little American Indian. Jet black hair and red skin. I have a picture somewhere. I'll have to try and dig that up. But the boys were not a problem. The last one was pretty dramatic. I had lost a baby in between number 4 and number 5. And they got pregnant again. And little Linus was born in the middle of a blizzard in December, a week before Christmas. God bless the doctor for coming out. The previous doctors that I had do the home births, the one that delivered number 2 and number 3, he was told he either has to stop doing home births or give up his hospital privileges. So of course he gave up home birthing.
Yeah.
But he was a very good doctor. And the other 2, I think they were all from the same practice. And that was good. And the last one, I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I looked and looked and looked. And what I found was Dr. White. And he and his wife started the La Leche League. And he was down in Franklin Park. So I had to travel ways from my visits. But God bless him for coming out in the middle of a snow blizzard. I mean, it was so cold, there was ice on the inside of the bedroom windows. It was so cold. But that was a pretty fast, again, about 6 and a half hours. But it was wonderful just to be able to, you know, get up and move and eat and drink. And because I think when you're in the hospital, they don't let you eat or drink anything. I don't know why. And I did, I think one of them I did end up throwing up during the labor. I remember pacing up and down the halls, and at one point I did throw up, but that was short-lived. But it was all a wonderful experience. And the last one, so I had Oscar, who's now a chiropractor, Bronwyn, who lives in Louisiana, Axel, who is now a new dad himself, and the doctor he took the baby to, and they ended up having a home birth, God bless him. The doctor he went for his first well baby checkup was the same doctor that delivered him. It's really something. Yeah.
That's very cool.
And so he's the one with the bakery cafe. He's a busy dad. And then the next one, that's Axel Ambrose, who's also a chef, pastry chef, baker. And then Linus, the youngest, is a farmer. He graduated with a degree in organic, sustainable agriculture and business. And he's trying to become a mushroom grower. Very he's cool. growing mushrooms in the house. He's doing very, very well. But he's my little farmer. In Chicago, we lived in a big house on a small lot. And it was a house built in the 1800s, a three-story. And Linus became an orchid grower while he was in high school, much to my surprise. He just has this green thumb. Sometimes I think he's my grandfather, yeah. Reincarnated, because he was a horticulturist and knew a lot about plants and stuff. But Linus grows things in buckets on the roof and on the porches, and he just has this green thumb. He just seems to know, you know, what plants need and how to get the most out of them. He has a compost in the front yard. Mm-hmm. He turned out to be a very amazing child.
As are all your children.
They are all amazing in their own rights.
Yeah.
But
you said something really interesting about doctors losing privileges. So I've been looking at home births in the Nashville area, mm-hmm. and there's not a single doctor that does them. They're all mm-hmm. midwives.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, when did that change happen and why did it happen?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know doctors used to, well, I guess I assume doctors yeah. used to do that.
Yeah.
And here's the catch in that. That's a real important fact. The doctors don't do home births. It's now midwives. And the midwives are on a very short leash around hemoglobin status. Any woman who presents below 12, they can't have a home birth. The midwife community will shut their doors. So you have to be, you're going to get caught in the middle now. This is what the problem is in the Amish community. These people are very committed to a natural lifestyle, mm-hmm. but they're getting whipsawed by the system around hemoglobin status, because nobody knows about Philip Steer's research from 1995. Nobody knows that hemodilution has been going on planet Earth for millennia of millennia.
Mm.
They're being forced into these artificial thresholds of hemoglobin status. Well, it can't go below 12, well, it certainly can't go below 10. And as soon as it goes below 12, the midwives shut down, which then throws these individuals back into the hospital system, which is the antithesis of what they want.
Yeah.
And then, as Dr. Liz points out, then they get their talons out. And once you're in their system, good night, Irene. Yeah. And so you may not appreciate how important this conversation is that we're having. This is profound truth that's being shared mm-hmm. between us that is falling on deaf ears in the conventional birthing mm-hmm. practitioner community. And that's where the conflict is. And you were asking about nausea and then miscarriages.
Mm-hmm.
The most obvious explanation for the nausea is most women today are iron toxic, because we live in a very iron-centric world. Iron's fortified everywhere.
Yeah.
They started adding iron filings to our food system in 1941. Then they increased it 50% in 1969. Nobody really knows how much iron we're eating, but it's a lot. And parenthetically, there's 9 different forms of iron added to our food. How many of them are carcinogens? All 9. That's mm-hmm. a good thing to know. So, people who get nausea, it's usually right after they start taking the prenatal, which has a bolus of iron. Mm-hmm. It might have 40 to 65 milligrams of iron. Mm-hmm. Again, folks, that's 2 months worth of iron. 65 milligrams of iron? The understanding of iron metabolism is completely distorted in the conventional community.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to miscarriage. Well, let me go geek on you, because it's fascinating. Again, we have a low oxygen environment in the womb. It's not... it's not Mount Everest anymore. It's about 8% oxygen now. Well, anytime you've got oxygen, you better have a way to neutralize that oxygen. You've got to be able to, because whenever you're making energy and there are cells in the womb that need to make energy, and they're going to make energy aerobically, even though they're supporting life of an anaerobic being. Mm-hmm. I know that's kind of mind-blowing to think about. But the trophoblasts, those are the technical names for the uterine cells, they got to make energy aerobically. Well, they're going to give off exhaust when they do that. Mm-hmm. That exhaust is, it's a form of oxygen called reactive oxygen species, right? And anytime you give off oxygen or give off oxidants, you've got to neutralize them. And turns out that not only does copper facilitate making the energy in these trophoblasts, it facilitates neutralizing the exhaust. Really, really important. So if your copper's low, that's going to affect that. And the practitioners should know your copper status if they were at all concerned about ceruloplasmin or hefestin or zyklopin, but they measure none of them. Again, that should really make you uncomfortable right now that your practitioner doesn't even know what those proteins are. And when the amount of oxidative stress builds up, so we've got reactive oxygen species, oxidants, and oxidative stress all mean the same thing, too much exhaust. And when the exhaust builds up, there's a neurotransmitter that gets released. This is fascinating. It's called serotonin. And as serotonin gets increased, its job, it's an amazing chemical in our body. It isn't just involved in how you feel, how happy you are, you know, serotonin re-up inhibitors, you know. So if serotonin starts to build, it has a primal job in the body. Cause contraction. Create contraction. And what's supposed to happen is that there's an enzyme called amine oxidase. Anytime you see the word or hear the word oxidase, it means it's using oxygen to do something. There's a lot of energy in that oxygen molecule. So you got two atoms of oxygen come together to form O2, and it's just full of energy. And when the exhaust starts to build, serotonin rises, and in a copper deficient body, in a body that's being drowned in prenatals with too much iron, copper metabolism goes down. Amine oxidase doesn't have its battery to turn off the serotonin, so it doesn't cause the contraction. And that's what a miscarriage is.
Wow.
It's absolutely biochemically driven. And if you don't understand the basics, then it appears mysterious and frightening. And what's really tragic is that people who've experienced a miscarriage, like my former wife and I did, it's very traumatizing because you think you did something wrong. So what happens? You go into a state of fear. And we spell it differently, F-E-A-R. And what does that spell? Iron attracts rust. That's exactly what happens in a state of fear. Your iron levels are going up. Cortisol is rising. What does cortisol do? Binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. And so you've just lost the regulation of the metals in a body that's experiencing a biological event because oxygen was not being metabolized because of missing copper, because the practitioner is completely unaware of its role in the body. And if you want to have a healthy there are women out there now who've had multiple pregnancies, and then they go on the RCP, the root cause protocol, mm-hmm. and they're called RCP babies. Completely different experience, completely different pregnancy. The symptoms are completely different. The birthing process, completely different. And people just need to know that Mother Nature figured this out a long time ago. And if you're relying on the latest research, I would run the other way, because it's not based on Mother Nature. It's based on manipulated science. Mm-hmm. They're very different. So
I'm going to have to listen to that multiple times, because you just blew my mind in like six different ways.
Okay. No, and again, the beauty of these conversations is that Stephanie is a step-down transformer. Your community is relying on you to bring them knowledge, but not just knowledge, truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, Dr. Liz and I have a lot of experience between us. And I think we're really devoted to the truth as individuals and as a couple. But like you said, sometimes you have to listen to it again and again to really let it seep in and become a part of your consciousness. Because what we're sharing is very disruptive information to the mainstream message.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be a point of excitement for you. That we've had a completely different experience based on our respective experiences, mine more in a reading setting and hers more in a laboratory setting, because she's been there producing the babies, but also working with the mom. You should see Dr. Liz around pregnant women and newborn babies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, she's a different person. And it's really exciting to witness it. And I was raised in an allopathic family, a lot of illness in the family. My sister was a nurse. I was supposed to be a doctor, but thank God that didn't happen. And the thing is, I was very suspect of chiropractic until I saw Dr. Liz adjust a dog, a cat, and a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's amazing about a dog, a cat, and a baby? They don't have a filter that says it doesn't work. They just respond to the touch. The energy and the intention. That's very important for people who may not have had experience with chiropractic, is that they have, first of all, they have a philosophy. Most doctors don't, but chiropractic has a philosophy based on life. And there's absolute intention when they go to touch someone, to make an adjustment or to move energy. It's with intention, because they've thought through what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important thing to understand. So.
Oh, one more thing for looking for a chiropractor, make sure you find someone who's used to working with pregnant women, and hopefully you can find someone who knows the Webster technique.
Yes. Yeah.
Webster is, when I was in Chicago, I had a pretty large, pregnancy and child practice, and midwives would send me their clients towards the end of the pregnancy for back pain and different things. And I was able to successfully use the Webster technique and turn 9 breech babies.
Wow.
So it's an adjustment on the sacrum, and it's a release of the suspensory ligaments in the front to change the shape of the uterus to give the baby room to flip.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
9 babies flipped.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very satisfying. So Webster technique, Webster breech turning technique. So I would suggest that you find a chiropractor that does that and make sure they do that adjustment every visit as prevention, so that you don't end up having a breech or a transverse either.
That's great advice. I have a girlfriend that had a breech baby, and she went to a traditional medical doctor to try and turn it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that they do this, but I guess they give you an epidural because it's so painful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unsuccessful. They weren't able to. And she said an
external version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she even said she felt like the doctor didn't even really try, that they just checked the box to say, we did this and now we need to do a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really, I really love how you brought up starting the Webster early on, because you can kind of get ahead of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I would definitely start that like halfway through the pregnancy.
Mm.
And
that's great advice.
Seeing a chiropractor weekly is very helpful, because it prevents you from having that low back pain and discomfort. And again, the adjustments can probably help with nausea too, and inability to sleep and fatigue and all those different things. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I have one final question, and then I would like to go over just, so what I did is I did what every newly pregnant woman does, and I Googled like, okay, pregnant, what do you do? And so I got a list of the top prenatal vitamins. And actually what I did in the Google search is I looked at like the top 10 recommended prenatals and I wrote down what they had in common, which is interesting. So I'd like to talk about that.
So before we do that, real quick, I want to drop in one more truth bomb as a context for this. There are two very important downloads of nutrients that the pregnant woman gives to the baby. And one of them involves copper and the other involves retinol. Again, that thing that we're toxic to, right? So the three of us were adults and we have a liver. It's probably about the same size in our three bodies. And in a healthy adult liver, there's about 7 milligrams of copper. 7 milligrams, it's not very much. So it's a little tiny bit, but a little goes a long way. So when we were each born, assuming we were born to healthy moms, which we'll assume that, we were born with livers that had 70 milligrams of copper, 70. There's an enormous download. So I, at the beginning, we're talking about how ceruloplasm explodes in the pregnant woman's body. We can't make ceruloplasm without copper. There's this explosion of copper. Because why would that be? Because copper is really important for building new arteries and bloodlines and bringing oxygen to support the placental growth. And it's so central to life, but it gets demonized in a lot of circles. But the important thing is there's a very important download of copper in the last trimester. The last 12 weeks of the pregnancy is where this is enormous transfer of copper from the mom to the fetus. And what's happening in the modern era is women don't have enough copper. So the expression, babies are born perfect. No, that's a complete myth. Babies will take whatever they can get. And the baby will take whatever copper it can take at the detriment to the mom. And that's what fuels postpartum depression. That's what fuels the bleeding that takes place at deliveries. All the microcirculation to stop bleeding is copper dependent. And in low copper moms, they're going to have a higher incidence. It has nothing to do with hemoglobin status. That is complete mythology.
Wow.
So copper download, really, really important. Absolutely imperative that you, as Dr. Liz was saying, real food diet, ancestral foods, organ meats. You want to be really, look up in the Weston A. Price Foundation. They have an entire section devoted to pregnancy and early child feeding. So really, you want to focus on that because that's based on our ancestors' diet. The second download, though, is with breastfeeding. Now, my mom had an argument with her mom a week before I was born, and my mom's milk dried up. And what was that argument about? That must have been one heck of an argument that my mom just said. So I didn't get the benefit of the download. And what Dr. Liz was able to give to each of her children once, without restriction, retinol. Breast milk is this incredible source of vitamin A. If it's a toxin, why would it be in breast milk? Makes no sense, does it? So you gotta question the narrative when Mother Nature wants breast milk to be teeming with retinol. Why? Because retinol and the copper come together in the liver, in the fetus's liver, to form the backbone of the immune system for the first 2 years of life. Most important downloads that take place. Now here's the catch. This is my favorite part. How much iron and how much vitamin D is in breast milk, ladies and gentlemen? Zero. there is no iron and there is no vitamin D in breast milk. Why would that be? Maybe Mother Nature knows something we don't know. And what the food companies would have us believe is that, well, Mother Nature is defective, and that's why we're putting in 40 times more iron in infant formula. That's why we're putting in so much vitamin D, because we know better than Mother Nature. Run the other way. And if you're at all interested in a healthy, natural, not just childbirth process, but a natural, healthy child, you want to listen to this conversation several times over. And you really want to delve into the root cause protocol in terms of trying to bring your body back into balance. But those are very important facts to have at your disposal when you're being challenged by the birthing practitioners who are trying to pummel you full of iron and vitamin D, and they don't have their facts straight. Why do I feel so strongly about this? I think it's because I was denied the breast milk as a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what'd you do instead, Morky?
I had goat's milk and eggs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a better alternative than
The protein in goat's milk is almost identical to breast milk. Yeah. And so that was my mainstay. And that helped me. Mm. And then so.
All right, our final question, and this is kind of off topic, but it is still about pregnancy. thoughts about taking baby aspirin at 12 weeks to prevent preeclampsia?
No, I would never take aspirin. Mm-mm. No drugs for mama, sorry.
We're back to the womb. Mm-hmm. What's behind preeclampsia? It's rising oxidative stress.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And
so, magnesium.
Magnesium is very important. And so what doctors do is they wait for the preeclampsia to materialize, and then they'll give the pregnant woman a shot or an IV of magnesium sulfate. Wait till the crisis is so significant that the woman's blood pressure is going through the roof. They're having all sorts of blood sugar issues. And all it is it's a classic clinical sign of raging oxidative stress because of lack of magnesium and lack of bioavailable copper. And using aspirin does not make any sense at all. The goal of the mother is to maintain homeostasis while she's in the process of bringing this new being into being, growing the new being. Mm-hmm. And aspirin does not make sense in that process.
So do you recommend that pregnant women should be taking more magnesium than they typically would? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the magnesium burn rate is pretty high.
Okay.
And I think the best way to, again, typically what you take is around 5 milligrams per pound body weight. But I would guess a pregnant woman could go up to 6 or 7, maybe even 8 milligrams mm-hmm. per pound body. The way you figure out if I'm getting too much is you want your bowel movements to be formed and soft. And if they get too soft and too runny, then just ease up on the magnesium.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to know whether you're getting too much. Bowel tolerance. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to end with this because I get a lot of questions in my community about like, what's the best prenatal? Is there a prenatal vitamin? And so, like I said before, I just did a quick Google search of the top prenatal vitamins. I'll read off the things that they all have in common. And I think we've talked pretty in depth about why some of these things are harmful to you, but I'd love to give listeners like what they should be doing instead. So here are the top things that I found in prenatals: folate, and or folic acid, one or the other, choline, omega-3s, iron, vitamin A, as a vitamin B, different cocktails of that. A lot of them have B6 and B12.
Right.
So different forms of vitamin B, biotin, D3, iodine, and zinc.
And no copper, of course.
No copper. But yeah, but let's throw zinc in, which we know doesn't zinc chelate copper.
Shall I use my pendulum?
Sure, that would be kind of fun.
You want to see something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He often asks me to check different things. Okay, so let's see.
Talk about in vivo. This is, you can't get any more.
Which are a good idea? Folate? No. Choline? No. Omega-3s? No. Iron? No. Big no. Vitamin A? No. The B, synthetic B vitamins? No. Natural B vitamins? Yes. Biotin? No. D3? No. Iodine? Yes. Zinc? Maybe.
So the important thing is that what Dr. Liz is picking up there, she's using a pendulum to pick up the energy of each of these items. And iodine came up positive. The natural B vitamins came up positive. That makes perfect sense. The iodine, what people don't realize is that iodine and ceruloplasmin, that copper protein, have similar properties. They both are designed to turn ferrous iron into ferric iron. So ferrous is a plus
so
two
just
valence.
Three. So natural B vitamins, iodine, and zinc. It's the only ones that came up, yes.
Okay.
So everything else?
So plus two iron is very reactive. Plus three combined with either a transferrin for the recycling program or go into ferritin, which is a storage locker for iron. Ferritin in the cell is more like an ATM machine. You can store it, you can take it out. You can store it, you can take it out. But the thing is, when iron is being interacting with iodine, it's going to make that transaction, but it's not going to give off water the way ceruloplasmin does. Water is your friend. It's very, very important. So iodine does play a very important role, but it's not the role that practitioners think it is. It's not this be-all, end-all. It's basically, it's a synthetic form of ceruloplasmin without the water. That's a good thing to know. The B vitamins makes perfect sense. I think the issue with zinc, again, you have to be really careful. There's a lot of zinc that's found naturally in food. Pumpkin seeds, oysters, meats, whether it's organ or muscle meat, these are all very rich sources of zinc. When you start to get into supplemental forms of zinc, that's when you've got to be really careful, because zinc does have a backside. Zinc triggers a very powerful protein called metallothionein, and metallothionein binds up copper. That's not your friend, especially when you're trying to build energy to support new life. So it doesn't surprise me that zinc passed the sniff test, but I think it's more of the food-based forms as opposed to the supplemental forms. And we have to be really careful, especially in this era where everybody thinks zinc is their friend. Zinc is it's an important mineral. We can't live without it. There are hundreds of enzymes, but when you really get into the weeds of the literature, you're going to find that zinc is more structural than catalytic. And we're very grateful for the structural beams in this house, but if we want to run our devices, we go to the outlet where the catalytic activity is taking place with electrons, right? So there's a difference between a structural element and a catalytic element. And especially when you're pregnant, you want to be making energy. And the chance of taking in too much zinc could backfire on you. And so it's fascinating that what Steph has identified is this consistent pattern of supplementation that doesn't really support what we've been talking about. I mean, especially when you start talking about the B vitamins, that's unsettling. Choline, I'm actually surprised choline didn't make the grade, but it maybe it's the form that they're using. But choline is a very important source of what's called acetylcholine, and that's very important for calming down our sympathetic nervous system. But I think the important thing to conclude from this is that there may be alternatives to the recommended prenatals, what Dr. Liz was talking about was Standard Process has a supplement called Catalin. And the, and that particular supplement has a fascinating history. Royal Lee was a dentist, a nutritional genius. He was considered a three-century man. He was born in one century, did his work in the next century, and is really appreciated and understood in the third century. Mm-hmm. So he's a very important figure in the world of nutrition. Mm-hmm. And his mother came down with breast cancer after he'd started this supplement line called Standard Process, or if you're in Canada, Standard Process. Right? But God love the truckers. And so he developed that supplement for his mom, whose name is Catalin. It's, so he created this supplement for her. Her actual name is Lynn, but it's Catalin. And so he thought maybe it would help her with her breast cancer. And she lived for 20 years after the diagnosis. Wow. So it's a when you first look at it, you say, well, no, it doesn't compare with what Steph's come up with all these potent. You don't need potent. You need food-based, food concentrates, as Dr. Liz was saying, are so important that it,
the body can recognize it.
Yeah. Right. It's got to be in a form that the body knows what to do with. And it doesn't have to be mega doses. It just, a little goes a long way. So we have to be really careful when we're adding these nutrients, especially in a body that's building new life. You got to be very, very thoughtful about it.
Yeah. So. Wow. This covers, I'm so grateful. First of all, I'm grateful to be with you in person. This is so cool.
It's fun to
meet, you know, a health hero. And also to talk about this topic, because I feel like nobody's really talking about good prenatal care.
Right. They're not.
And it's confusing. Right. And women are scared. A lot of women find out they're pregnant. They're like, what do I do? This is uncharted territory, you know? And already they're in that state of F-E-A-R.
Absolutely true.
Dash A-R.
Right. That's exactly right.
And then they're taking these things, which are just adding fuel to fire.
Mm-hmm. And what you need to understand is that the fastest way to create the emotion fear in our body is to over-ingest iron. Mm. There is a direct relationship between that metal and our emotional state of fear. Trust me, there are other people who know that. Mm. And what's a good way to calm people down? Magnesium is the fastest way to calm someone down. But if you really want to regulate and calm the iron fire, you've got to have bioavailable copper. Mm-hmm. And what makes copper bioavailable is retinol. Retinol is, I would guess, the most overlooked, misunderstood, but most important nutrient in the human body. Mm-hmm. We were designed to run on fat. Our metabolism is a fat-burning machine. The mitochondria love fat. Mm-hmm. But what people don't realize is in order to break down fat, the enzymes that are used to break down fat are all copper dependent. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that sounds important. And you can't absorb copper if you don't have fat in your diet. So now we've got the two sides of this dynamic, that fat is absolutely essential to absorb copper. Copper is absolutely essential to break down and utilize fat.
Yeah.
And guess what's missing in our diet? Copper and fat. Mm-hmm. And then people wonder why they don't feel right. And that was the fuel that ran our ancestors' body for millennia up until about 1900. And then a lot of things changed at the turn of the last century. And they've been boiling the frog 1 degree at a time, 1 degree a year, about. Mm-hmm. And now we're in this rolling boil. We didn't realize it was coming. Mm-hmm. So there's way more to the story than you might have realized.
So focus on your magnesium. Epsom salt baths can be very helpful. Magnesium oil rubbed on the bottom of the feet at night can be helpful. Copper cream can be important.
Yep.
The bee pollen, again, needs to be chewed well. We have some every morning.
We were bees in a former life.
I love bee pollen.
Yeah.
and focus on your cod liver oil to get your A and your D in the proper balance.
But let's be persnickety about that. There are only two that we recommend. So it's Rosita's Atlantic cod liver oil, or you can get the Jigsaw Alaskan cod liver oil. Those are the only two that we recommend. There are about 100 different forms out there.
Yeah.
And what you've got to be careful of is the processing of these oils. You want to stay away from heat. You want to stay away from chemicals. And those are very carefully extracted forms of retinol that really help people get that vital nutrient in their body.
So if you have a problem with the taste and you're getting the bottles of liquid, what I typically do is add essential oils. So I might add orange, lemon, lime, spearmint.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Mm. And then shake it well before you take it. And we take, a tablespoon a day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Did this work for you?
I loved it.
Okay.
This is, okay. I'm on cloud nine right now. This is awesome.
You might have to come back.
You're welcome anytime.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you learned something new. I hope you feel encouraged and empowered to make informed decisions when it comes to your health. Maybe next time you read an article from Healthline or WebMD, you can be wise to the information provided in the text. Okay, time for us to leave our cozy little space together and head back out to the real world. Goodbye, everyone. Be well and be kind.